The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. It's Friday. What a week this thing has been. Total nightmare. And today we delve into... So what happened this week? Who won? Who won? We opened the show with that question. Who won? And it came from my children last night. What are the ramifications of all of this? How come the FBI wasn't called in? I mean, don't they find out the truth? No. No, they deliver a dossier. You want the FBI in? Do you trust? Does Ford trust the FBI with a dossier to keep those allegations secret? Because anybody can say anything. They only gather voices, and then the Senate would have to call them forward. Do you think that dossier is safe in the hands of anyone in Washington, D.C.? Honestly, do you? It's the same kind of dossier that said Donald Trump was taking golden showers in Moscow. They didn't keep that secret, did they? Also, Bill O'Reilly joins us. He is great and right spot on today. And Arthur Brooks joins us for a look at the country. Is America worth saving? The one question we're not asking. Is all of this worth saving? If so, why? And how? All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Friday, September 28th. Glenn
Beck. I was home yesterday with my children. They're homeschooled. My wife kept saying, please turn down the television, honey, because the kids have to pay attention. I had the Kavanaugh hearings on. Normally, if the news is on, the kids are not paying any attention at all. They can do anything if the news is on. But yesterday, it was compelling. I said to my wife, I think the kids need to watch this. This is history. This is our country at a pivot point. What we choose to do today and tomorrow and the next day, based on what happened yesterday, this is a fork in the road. My kids watched the horror show. They both said to me separately, I don't understand the process. I don't understand. How is this even working? I tried to explain it, but I couldn't because it made no sense at all. You have a prosecutor asking questions, line of inquiry, and then we go to 5 minutes of fluff and then back to her. She can't make a point. We can't find any information. My kids ask me, what is the evidence? There is no evidence. It's her or him. Because my kids had to finish their homework and it lasted all day, I turned it off and turned it on in another room. Both my kids separately asked me last night. This is a quote. Who won? That bothered me. Who won? Out of the mouths of babes. I was singing that last night as I turned on cable news. Cable news. It wasn't news, it was sports. It was ESPN. Who blocked? Who tackled? Who had the touchdown? I'm sick to my stomach. Is anyone thinking of the ramifications in Washington? Is anyone in Washington thinking about what this means for the republic? It was an embarrassment. I can't call myself an American if this is what the American people want, but I will tell you, I cannot believe I'm wrong on this. This is not reflective of the American people. I don't know who won, but I will tell you who lost. All of us. All of us lost yesterday. Our children lost yesterday. I think yesterday is the first day that I could say, Mr. Franklin, I don't think we're capable of keeping this republic.
It's Friday, September 28th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Anybody notice yesterday how the Republicans behaved? Now, I'm not going to give them extra points because, honestly, the only reason why they didn't question Ford themselves is because, quite honestly, the most pessimistic part of me says because they were cowards, because they didn't want to be asked them. They didn't want to be the ones on film, on television, asking a question that would then be taken and twisted into something angry, anti-women, pro-rapist. So what do? They got an ordinary-looking woman who was very qualified to ask all of the questions. So what happens on cable news last night? What happens on cable news last night is we don't know where she was going. We don't know why she was, what she was even building up to. Of course not. Because this system was not designed to do what they did yesterday. See, what this system has been designed to do. Now, this is not its original design. But what it's been designed to do lately is just give political candidates airtime so they can position themselves with their voters. That's all this system is for. It's not a search for truth. They weren't looking for the truth last night. And if I hear one more damn person say about the FBI, the FBI does not deliver truth. They deliver raw data. So they deliver all the he said, she said. Well, we have all of that. What we're looking for here is evidence. And there is no evidence. There's no evidence. So the Republicans, they get up and they treat Ford with respect. I'm tweeting the whole time. I am making sure I am on my best behavior because that's what the country needs. Best behavior. Not as a media person, but also as a dad. I didn't say this woman is making all this stuff up. I said this woman says this man pinned her down and tried to take her clothes off. When, Dad? 36, 37 years ago, we're not even sure of the year. We're not sure of the year? No, we're not sure of the month. We're not even sure of the day. Well, where did it happen? We don't know that. Well, does anybody else say that it happened? She said that there were four other people there. All four of them have said that didn't happen. Now, it'd be very easy for me to then say, see, she's lying. Instead, I expressed her viewpoint that it is something that they may not have remembered because it was normal for them. When the press was fawning over her crying, I did not utter to my children, no, she's not crying. Has anybody seen her wipe a tear? I said yesterday to my kids and to the public that I could feel her fear and I could understand it. She was in a very dicey situation yesterday. And I felt for her. And I listened to her. I went with an open mind. And here's what I found about Ford. Personally, I thought what we saw yesterday was somebody who was very afraid, somebody who was very nervous. But I'm sorry, I didn't connect the emotion of this was the worst experience of my life, and I've never been able to get past it. It's why I have two front doors. I was not able to get past it. It didn't seem connected. Now, she was asking for caffeine. I wanted to ask the question, which I think is absolutely appropriate, and I'm not trying to throw her under the bus, but in your case, you had to fly here, which you don't like to do. You had to fly here. You are now, your family is under attack. People have come out of the woods. You don't know what this hearing is going to be. I can't imagine you've slept well for a week. Are you under any kind of doctor's orders or medication? Why are you asking for caffeine? I would think that this would keep you wide awake. This is the most important thing you'll ever probably do. Why caffeine? When she said halfway through, "I'm sorry, Senator, I can't keep up. My brain's not working fast right now," I wondered again, are you on any kind of medication? That is not a smear. That's an honest question, because she seemed detached to me, recalling the worst time of her life. Her voice changed. But I didn't see it in her face. I didn't see it in her eyes. Now, that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I think she was tranquilized. I think she was on medication, which I understand. But if that's true, that would explain why it didn't seem to come from the chest. It seemed to come from her head. Now, maybe others had a different experience with her. But I walked away from it thinking she's somewhat credible. She should be taken seriously, but I don't know. But I was actually, before Kavanaugh spoke, more open to her having a slam dunk. I wanted to see how he was going to respond. And then I saw him respond. And I'm sorry, but that emotion was real. That emotion came from the heart, not the head. Now, I am willing to say they both believe exactly what they're saying. 100%. I have a hard time with somebody saying to the press, saying in a statement, "I didn't know for sure, but after I met with my attorneys for 6 days, I'm 100% sure it was Brett Kavanaugh." Could it be Brett Kavanaugh? Yeah, it could be. Is it? I have no idea, because I do believe him. So now we're left with, what are we going to do? Well, what do we do? Yeah, that's the funny thing. That's why you don't air these things in public. That's why you have a prosecutor's office who looks at the cops and says, "Well, you give me a bunch of raw data here, it means nothing." "I know, well, we had the FBI ask all these questions." "Well, yeah, you got a lot of questions here, but I don't see any answers. I don't have a case. I'd be laughed out of court." This is why the Democrats did not bring this up 2 months ago, because there is no answer to this. You know who the real abuser is here? Senator Feinstein and the rest of her clan, who tried to round up and lynch a man based on hearsay. How was that letter leaked? We all know the Democratic Party leaked that letter. Why? because they knew they had nothing. All they had was a smear. Now, they may believe her, and you can believe her. I'm not God. So I'm at the point where I say, I think it's pretty weak, but who am I to say? I can't judge her emotion. I have a problem with it, but everybody's different. So I'm not going to judge her. I look at Kavanaugh. I believe him. I believe his emotion was real. I believe this man, you want to talk about reparations? How do you repair his life? Now, God help him if he's a liar. God help her if she's a liar. But dear God, help us. Because we are turning into animals. What's really frightening is people deserve in a republic the government that they get. What the hell did yesterday say about us?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Bill, how are things?
Busy, Beck. I'm glad you're back on the radio.
Thank you.
Feeling better, I hope?
I am feeling better. Yesterday did not help my blood pressure at all.
No.
I watched this yesterday, and I'm anxious to hear your view of this. I thought, you know, with an exception of the lack of evidence, the lack of any specific detail, I couldn't come out and say, oh, she's lying. This is clearly a lie. It didn't feel like it came from her heart as much as it did from her head, but she was so afraid of testifying yesterday. I think that kind of jumbled everything. So I don't know if I even got a real read from her, but I'm willing to take it at face value if there was evidence. There is no evidence. And when Kavanaugh came up, I mean, he made me cry two or three times just because of the thought of what his life has been like against a foe that is shadow boxing.
Tell me about it, Beck.
I know.
Okay. So I approach things differently than most media people do. And I watched all of it yesterday. I saw the whole thing because I was on BillO'Reilly.com tweeting. I wrote a column, I wrote a message of the day, and then I delivered my half-hour broadcast last night. I de-emphasized the testimony of Dr. Ford only because I can not say with any certainty what happened to her. And I think that's fair. It's beyond my capability. I can't read her mind. I can't read her heart.
And I think
I
most
talked to a therapist.
Most Americans are like this. I'm not willing to throw her under the bus.
Right. I respectfully listened to her.
Yes.
And then I started to put things together. So the headline of the story is she cannot corroborate her accusation against an American citizen, Brett Kavanaugh. That's the headline. Everybody should understand that. Can't corroborate it. And everybody's gone over it, but I'll just tell you one thing. I have a 15-year-old son, and I discussed this with him. If you're 15 years old and you're traumatized, you remember, as Dr. Ford did. But you also remember details about it. You don't remember who drove you there or who drove you home? Impossible. To me. Now, I'm sure you can get a psychologist to come in and say, oh, no, people black out or whatever. To me, you got to know how you got home.
Bill, I have to tell you, there are things that, you know, the only thing I can compare this to is my mother's sudden death. I'm 15 years old. My mother suddenly dies. I can tell you where I was when I found out. I can tell you where I, you know, when I first suspected, I can tell you where I was. I can tell you when I was, which class I was in, what I was looking at. I can't tell you the names of the faces and the people around me, but I can remember all those details. I can remember what we had to do that day. I can remember some very clear specifics. It's beyond reason to me to not be able to say it was at this house, because that would be right. Part of it. You would remember, you would avoid that house.
You and I are logical linear thinkers, all right? And so that is a major, major piece of our evaluation. But then it gets a little dicey. And here's really, this is the second headline. Dianne Feinstein is a villain. She orchestrated this whole thing. She directed Dr. Ford to the most radical left law firm in the country. Dr. Ford doesn't know who's paying her lawyers, doesn't know who paid for the lie detector test. Her lawyers told the Senate Judiciary Committee she couldn't go in for an interview because she was afraid to fly. And the woman from Arizona dismantled that immediately by saying, you, Dr. Ford, have flown all over the world.
Did you notice, though, Bill, that they didn't, what the commentators were saying yesterday was not that they were, they said the Democrats or the Republicans and this prosecutor, they were trying to undermine her credibility. No, they weren't. They were trying to point out she's being used and manipulated here.
I think that she bears a little bit of guilt for this. The Senate Judiciary Committee wanted to interview her to get her on the record so they could investigate her story. Not to nail her to the wall. They wanted to get a timeline and names so they could check them out. She refused to do the interview. And you're telling me that a PhD doesn't know who's paying the lawyers?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't know who's paying the lie detector test? Doesn't know what day the lie detector test was given? She said, well, you know, it was on a day my grandmother died, or maybe the day after. You know, it starts not to stack. And anybody in this country who has been accused of anything, and that includes kids in classrooms, all right, which they didn't do, unfairly accused, starts to say, all right, give me the facts. Tell me the facts. They weren't told. So my conclusion was, if I were a senator of the United States, I would vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh, because there was simply nothing there to disqualify him. I'm a linear thinker. I'm a logical man. Everybody listening to us right now, ask yourself this question. Was there anything that you saw or heard yesterday that disqualified Judge Brett Kavanaugh from sitting on the Supreme Court? Is a woman standing at an elevator screaming at a senator that she herself was assaulted, therefore Judge Kavanaugh is guilty? Is that enough to vote against Judge Kavanaugh? Because that's what the senator from Hawaii is saying. That's what Kirsten Gillibrand from New York is saying, and Kamala Harris, and Dianne Feinstein. They're saying because women have been assaulted in the past, in the right now, whatever, you can't vote for any man who's been accused. Any man. So therefore, anybody can raise an accusation to disqualify anyone from an appointed position or even running for office.
Bill, your thoughts on Kavanaugh? He's being described everywhere in the press as angry and hostile.
Well, that's not how I saw him. I saw him as indignant and fed up. But, you know, spin is spin. It was a vicious cartoon in my local newspaper, Newsday on Long Island, which is, you know, the usual knee-jerk liberal paper about Kavanaugh, you know, looking menacing and all of this. And then next to him, Dr. Ford crying, you know, that kind of
no,
stuff.
No, she was not crying. There was not
no,
one
this
tear.
Was in the political cartoon.
Okay, all right.
All right, so the, you know, yeah, I know. The best moment that Kavanaugh had was when he talked about his 10-year-old daughter, suggesting that they pray for the woman. And I thought Kavanaugh was very smart to come out blazing, because you have to understand one thing, and this is the only thing that's going to save America. Because in your opening remarks, you were right. I mean, we're living now in a time where we're on the cliff. We can go over. If Americans say, hey, you know, I'm going to support a party that's going to destroy anyone they don't like, I'm going to support that party and give them power. This is Stalin now, when his whole thing changes. But Kavanaugh came out, and he was very raw in his defense, saying, you destroyed me. And even if he gets confirmed, this will never go away.
Never.
Right.
Never.
And his wife and daughters would be traumatized forever as well. So you did it. And you did it for political reasons, because I'm innocent. Very powerful. Now, what I'm feeling and seeing in my community is anger and a backlash against the left-wing media, which is as dishonest as it's ever been in this country, and the Feinstein, Schumer-led Democratic Party. I'm seeing that here, and I live in a pretty diverse community, not a conservative place. And anger overrides every other emotion when it comes to voting and politics. Let me repeat that. Anger overrides everything else. Dr. Ford will be forgotten. Nobody's going to remember Dr. Ford unless she continues a crusade in 2 months. But Kavanaugh, they're never going to forget. And the anger about attacking him and his family is now at, I think, a record level. I saw the overnights just for the cable news, Fox News doing record ratings because people are coming in there who support Kavanaugh. The others, CNN and MSNBC, are far behind. So the anger is being galvanized. And will it show up in the midterm elections? I think it might.
I think it might,
because
too.
Because I fully expect, Beck, another attack, either on Kavanaugh or President Trump, coming before the vote.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and we really want to thank you for listening.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
In my book, Addicted to Outrage, there are lots of examples of why we should really be talking about something entirely different. Why we should be talking about how do we strengthen this and spread this around the world. Right now, our dialogue is America sucks, nothing is good, everything is bad, and that is absolutely not true. In the middle chapter of the book, I ask this question. Is this worth saving? Nobody's asking this. We're talking about getting rid of capitalism, changing our whole system, changing everything about it. It doesn't work. No one is asking the question that must be asked first. Is this worth saving? Is America and the West good or bad? It can be both, because people are both. But is it on the whole, Has it helped more people or hurt more people? We're not having that conversation. We are having it now. Arthur Brooks is the president of the American Enterprise Institute. He's a guy who grew up in Seattle. I grew up in the Seattle area. He remembers the first time he saw poverty, and I think it's the first time I really saw poverty as well. I think it was probably the Michael Jackson, that fundraiser, We Are the World, where we were trying to raise money for Ethiopia, and we saw these kids with the bloated stomachs and the flies on their face. We had never seen anything like that. That was a pivot point for Arthur Brooks in his life. Arthur, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Glenn, how are you?
Very good.
I've talked to you in months. How are you doing?
I am great. I wanted to get you on because we do not talk about what capitalism and what this country has done, what the Western way of life has done, and we are just allowing it to be thrown out the window. And yeah. You make a compelling case because you didn't come at this with politics in mind.
No, I don't. You know, and a lot of the things that we're talking about today, I was listening to the last segment of your great show, and you're talking about this big war, this big cultural battle that we're having in this country. So whether it's about the Kavanaugh hearings or about the Trump administration or about capitalism in general, these are really kind of proxy cultural battles that we're having in our country today. It's a culture of outrage. You've talked about this a lot. You've done yeoman's work on this important topic, and it's important for all of us to remember. Remember, we are so unbelievably blessed in this country. We live in a peaceful society. I mean, you'd go on social media if you dare, you know, if you can stomach it, and listen to people saying the most vile, ghastly things to each other. But let's remember, there's going to be no knock in the night. There's going to be no jackbooted thug. Nobody's going to take you off to prison. God bless this country. And we have to stop taking for granted the fact that we live in a democratic, peaceful society. And we have to stop trashing each other all the time and having these dumb proxy wars. It's completely unproductive.
So right now, the big ideas are being trashed. The ideas of freedom of speech, because, you know, you have to have a safety space. All this nonsense.
Yeah.
But also capitalism itself. When you saw the pictures back in the 80s of those starving Ethiopians, it bothered you, and you actually that set your feet on a course of trying to find out what happened to them, right?
It did. I mean, the fact that I'm a political conservative today has everything to do with the fact that I share the objectives of most of my left-wing friends and family, that I care about poverty the most. And I started to look for the way that you can wipe out poverty. Everybody listening to us, Glenn, believes in their obligation, in fact, their privilege to lift up their brothers and sisters at the margins of American society and society around the world. What really matters is what works, what system works while you sleep. I became a proponent of the American free enterprise system as a gift to the world because I wanted to do more to help my brothers and sisters. And I found that there was one system that pulled people up by the billions all around the world. These are big issues that we need to be talking about in America today and how we can do this better.
Can you give me some of the stats, Arthur? I don't know if you have them off the top of your head.
Oh, I do. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
So from 1970 until today, you know, when you and I were really little kids, that was when the world started to open up and people started to see what was going on. So it was really in the 70s that people saw that Ethiopian famine. I went to India for the first time when I was 19 years old in 1983. I saw starving children. It was ghastly. From 1970 until today, 80% of the world's poverty has been eradicated. Starvation-level poverty has been eradicated. Now, 70% of Americans actually think that poverty is getting worse. And the reason is because it's never like front page in the New York Times or any of the newspaper, millions saved from poverty. I mean, that's not a news story. You only see the things that are going wrong. But the truth is that 2 billion of our brothers and sisters have been pulled out of starvation level poverty, Glenn, since you and I were kids. And there was one thing that did that, and that was democratic capitalism. And that is America's export to the world.
There, I don't think you would disagree with me, Arthur, that we are not using the first half of Wealth of Nations moral sentiments. We think that capitalism is just going to be good no matter, you know, who's wielding it, and it's just going to produce wonderful things. No, it, as Adam Smith lines out, it can produce really bad things as well.
Yeah.
Capitalism depends on the people who are wielding it, but also depends on what our goals are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's corrupt now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's it. Well, it's because the problem is it's not capitalism. A lot of what we see today, wired deals, cronyism, all the special stuff that's going on with powerful people in Washington, D.C., and in every state capital around the country, that's actually not competition. That's trying to shut competition down on behalf of powerful people. So competition is good. Competition in politics and in economics and in the competition of ideas. The fact is that, you know, the Glenn Beck Show is part of the competition of ideas in a free and democratic nation. It's very, very important. Anybody who wants to shut down competition on behalf of powerful people is not a competitor, doesn't believe in capitalism, doesn't believe in democracy, and doesn't believe in the free exchange of ideas. To compete means to do it better than the other guy, fairly, peacefully, and respectfully, and to win over an audience. And so that's really what we ought to be doing, and that's what we're moving away from.
Okay, so Arthur, I'm going to take a quick break, and I want to come back with a question that I cannot find a satisfactory answer on. I am a big believer in capitalism. However, throughout history, some people like Vanderbilts, et cetera, they get so much money, they have so much power that they are controlling things, and it just seems to spiral out of control when you have, you know, just a lock on this wealth. And we are creating people through Google, et cetera, that are doing the same thing. How do you balance the power? How do you make sure who can compete against Google? Arthur Brooks from arthurbrooks.com. Make sure you listen to his podcast, The Arthur Brooks Show. Really smart guy, really good guy, musician, grew up in, you know, in the Pacific Northwest. It kind of sounds like he kind of had, you know, a typical Seattle hippie kind of family. Went around the world. It's in a documentary. I think the documentary is called, what's it called, Arthur?
The Pursuit.
And he's got a fascinating life and was just really searching for answers. Came to find that capitalism is what solves all these problems that we have and has made huge, huge increases in happiness around the world and health. So, my problem here, and the only loose end I can't tie up, is people like Rockefeller that have, you know, they do something because, you know, they discovered oil and they were smart enough to put it all together. And they accumulate this power. And then with all of that money comes corruption. And they start to control everybody else's lives and start making all the decisions because they have all of this money. How do you reconcile that? Because I don't want to take money away from people.
Right. No, I got it, Glenn. And, you know, it is distressing when you see something like a family where there was a patriarch that was a good entrepreneur, but then kind of built a moat around the castle.
Yes.
And that kept a bunch of wealth in the family for six generations and made it harder for other people to rise through crony capitalism. That's a big problem. That's actually not capitalism. That's a different system. That's a system of wired deals that you could find in any socialist system, any monarchy, any place all around the world. And that's something that we have to fight, whether it's capitalism or whatever ism, whatever economic system that we've got. We have to democratize opportunity. The problem is not that we've got very rich people. The problem is people have a hard time rising, and we have to be putting our resources and our energy and our law and our initiative toward people that are at the bottom, not so they can all get to the top, but so that they can get to the middle. The essence of the American experience, the moral basis of the American experience, is that the you know, three generations ago, the Brookses and the Becks who were just like scratching out potatoes someplace. They're nothing more than ambitious riffraff who came to this country and wanted to get to the middle and support themselves and their families. And we have to be warriors for a system that makes sure that people can go from the bottom to the middle. You know, right now, it's a very distressing thing. You know, you go to any good Ivy League university and you're going to find that there's a system of preferences for legacies. You know, if you went to a university, it's maybe four or five times more likely that your kid is going to get into that great university, which all that is just saying you got into the lucky genetics club. You know, that's actually not compatible with a system of American opportunity, with a system of equal dignity of experience. And so that's actually what we need to be thinking about. Don't worry about Google. Worry a lot more about the fact that people at the periphery, at the bottom of our society, can't rise today. That's the really un-American thing.
And why can't they rise?
They can't rise because we have a discriminatory system of unequal education where poor kids are locked into public education systems. Their parents don't have choices, number one. Number two is we don't have skills training in our communities. We tell people that if they don't go to college, they're somehow losers. We don't have vocational and technical education systems, which is the ultimate education reform. We don't have an apprenticeship system in this country. And most importantly, Glenn, we don't culturally value the skills that come from actually not going to college, where people actually have work skills where they can get when they can get ahead. If we do those things, we can really recreate the opportunity society.
How did the apprentice system go away?
It went away for a bunch of different reasons, but part of it had to do with the fact that, you know, back in the until the 1960s, there was a parallel tracking system in America where white kids would be tracked toward college and black kids, especially in the South, would be tracked toward the trades. And you and I know that one of the great advances in American society was the civil rights movement, where we did away with stuff like that. Unfortunately, there were some things where we threw the baby out with the bathwater. White kids, black kids, every kind of kids should have the opportunity to succeed through hard work and skills and personal initiative without going to college.
It's amazing, Arthur, that it's that early. I think of apprenticeships, and I think, you know, you're going back to Charles Dickens' time since we've seen it. It's amazing that those that really disappeared in the 60s and 70s. Back with more Arthur Brooks and Is America Worth Saving?
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.